listening to the Melanated Movement podcast with Tess and Anne. We invite you to take a deep breath, open your mind, and prepare to go on this wild ride. Episode loading in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Hello.
Hello. Episode brought to you by Mark. Where have you been?
Where have you been, twin?
If that song is not stuck in your head from our last episode, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Did you even listen to our last episode?
What are you doing?
Did you even try?
Did you even try?
Did you even support the MMP fam?
But did you try?
But did you try though? All right.
I'm gonna need you to try a little bit harder. Right. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not gonna say that. That's it. Welcome to episode 2 of season 3 of the Melanated Movement podcast with Tess and Anne. This is your girl Anne. And
hey, Tess!
Hi, Tess.
Hello, Anne. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing after Black History Month and now really on the head, because it just started.
We're in the head.
We just got here. Exactly. How are you doing?
I'm good. So Black History Month was great. I mean, as much as Black History Month can be, you know what I'm saying? It was good. Mm-hmm. So I had a good time learning more about Black history and so on, and learning more not only about us, but for other cultures, I guess, like I mentioned in the previous episode. Now we are in Women's History Month.
Yes, we are.
I'm excited. Today is March 8th that we're recording, and today is International Women's Day. So happy International Women's Day to you.
Happy International Women's Day. By the time you hear this, it will have been a whole week later. But today, as we record, we want you to know we're thinking of you.
Right. Because we celebrate every day, not just today.
That's right. How are you feeling? Because I know that when we talked in previous seasons, we talked about our identities, right? And then one of the really cool things that we actually mentioned was how we identify. And so I don't know if you want to introduce yourself again, just so maybe for our new listeners, because we got a bunch of new people since. Yeah. And, you know, it'd be really nice to kind of, you know, give me the rundown on who Anne is.
So Anne, hi, my name is Anne. I am the co-host of the Melanated Movement podcast. We've been doing this for 3 years. I am a cis woman. I identify as a non-binary person. However, I do celebrate all parts of myself. So that's a little tidbit. I am a queer person. I do queer things. I like queer history. I identify as a queer creator. We both do. I identify as a creative. I identify as a Black person. Yeah, that's it.
Hands on the hips. That's right.
And you?
Thank you. Okay. No, and thank you for introducing yourself again for our listeners and people who watch us. Yeah, of course. I'm Tess. I'm the other half of the Melanated Movement podcast. Been doing this with my wonderful co-host here for 3 years, like you said. And I identify as, I don't identify as trans, though I feel like cis heteronormativity or cis genderism in general kind of is still on the gray line for me. What I will say though is, like, I do identify as a non-binary person as well. Of non-binary femme is the way, like, I like to describe it, because I do like the feminine, the divine feminine in me, and I feel like I'm able to honor it. And people who see me on the street, you know, identify me as a woman, because, you know, there's the way you see yourself and there's the ways you express yourself, and then based on that expression, the way that people identify you. So I am Black, I am an NB, I love femininity, I avid supporter of women. I Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's me. Also, yeah, very much like queer. There's nothing about me that I feel fits the heteronormative.
Yeah.
Even you know, in like different dating history, like I feel like even dating, if I were to like date a straight person or like straight man, like I feel like I'd still be like, I just need you to know, like I'm queer.
I'm queer as hell. Yeah. That's actually something that people really experience of like if they are queer to where they're not leaning one to one side or another, and they're a cis woman or they're feminine, you know, they're feminine presenting, and mm-hmm. then they date like a heterosexual male or they date the opposite sex or someone mm-hmm. that presents themselves in that way. Sometimes they feel like they've lost some form of their queerness. Like, I have to be queer on the outside so people know I'm with them. In mm-hmm. actuality, of course, like you being yourself is a real like definition of being queer and being mm-hmm. comfortable in yourself and things of that nature. But I feel like many of us have struggled with like having the right type of exterior, like I guess the personification
presentation
of the mm-hmm. and then also like by you feeling like you are, you know, expressing your true exterior, you feel like you attract that, like those types of people. But then it's kind of like we've always said, what does queer look like? What does this look like? What does whatever look like? And to get out of like that, I guess, that way of thinking, we have to be okay with the decisions that we've made to be happy, at the same time supporting and uplifting our community.
That was so well said. I don't even have any. I have no notes. No notes. No, I think no. I think it's beautiful. I agree with you in that there's like such an erasure that happens when you kind of like step out, and it's not even stepping out of it, because mm-hmm. like I feel like queer. Like I think we define queerness in a few like episodes before. We can reference it mm-hmm. for you guys to kind of listen to. It's like as we define it, there people assign different ascribe different definition to what queerness means to them, right? Or even to like what hetero means, right? And
what is hetero? At least to me, to people.
Right? I mean, because there's of course like sexual orientation and then sexual expression, and there's like I mean, it's a conglomerate, right? Like it's such a huge spectrum, mm-hmm. and we fall on either side of it, and there's so many intersections, you know, and all of that as well, that I don't feel like there's no one definition to each term. Right. And so when we were talking about it, I really thought about like the erasure that happens, and sometimes like even the internal erasure that happens. Like it doesn't mean if I'm dating, you know, the opposite sex, right? When historically I've dated someone of the same sex or the same gender or something like that, then it must mean something differently. Right. And I feel like as we defining queerness, it's more like an umbrella term. Mm-hmm. And it really encompasses like so many identities and encompasses like so many political views. Like, sometimes it really is the way that you vote and the way that you show up in spaces and the way that you show up when advocating or in grassroots movements and things like that, in conversations. And so I'm really happy that you made that distinction.
Thanks.
In our conversation.
Mm-hmm. Conversations between us, I feel like, always have like just a little bit more. I feel like the conversation that we have, I feel like part of the reason why we always mention this too, us creating MMP, it was us transforming the conversations that we were having in our kitchens, like on the patio, on a random mm-hmm. Wednesday, and discussing mm-hmm. not only ourselves and how we're identifying, how the world around us is identifying us and all the things that we've experienced, but also wanting to have more conversations because we experience such a similar life, if that makes sense. I feel like mm-hmm. all the things we experience are a bit parallel. And I feel mm-hmm. like where there's questions, I feel like we on the other side tend to have either an answer or a way to go about it, or there's just a form of understanding where we feel safe. But mm-hmm. us wanting to open up the conversations to where, one, we're not the only one experiencing it, but also there's people that don't even know that others are experiencing it, and they don't know how to necessarily translate it or be there for them or be able to have
That's
a conversation
very true.
With them. Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
no, absolutely.
MMP was created for many reasons.
No, absolutely. I can't wait for us to really start having other people over. So we're mm-hmm. having these conversations and we get like those different yeah. perspectives. It is coming. As we know, we're taking it easy into season three, but you know, we're definitely easy. Going to have people over. Well, there's nothing easy about it.
There's nothing easy in this life.
That was a very loose definition of easy. Yeah. Sorry about that. You're right. You know what? You're right.
We're just scheduled people. So a lot of, because not only have we always been scheduled people, but our, I guess our dynamic has kind of changed with what, mm-hmm. how we do things. So scheduling is really important. So I guess a little back of the scenes or behind the scenes for MMP, like we create like a list of topics. We create mm-hmm. how we want to go about it. We ask questions either to friends, families, supporters, listeners, whatever, to see if those topics align, if they want to go into those topics, if they have other topics that might be comparable or whatever. But also, like, for the people that have reached out to us that want to work with us, we then place, okay, well, these podcasters or this guest would align very well with this topic. And then we send those right. topics to whomever we would like to be on the show and mm-hmm. ask if they would be available on whatever dates. So on that's the right. dates that they're available, we're available, that's what happens. But yep. You know, a lot of things take
gotta
scheduling
synergize.
Time.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we did ask specifically for this, like for Black, like for not say Black, see, I mean Black History Month
black,
is what I
black
want to
on
say.
Black
for
black
Women's
on
History
black, black on black, black on black, black on black, black. I'm on my black. Sorry,
we're black every day. You know, like we
every
can't
day
really
all
get
time.
Away from it.
My
don't
spirit,
want to.
My soul. Mm-hmm.
That's right. We did ask for Women's History Month, like if there's anything specific, right? That. Our listeners wanted for us to maybe mention or elevate or bring up during this conversation. And so, Anne, do you want to kind of go over the
sure.
first one?
Let me pull out my handy dandy. I have to get
handy dandy. Okay.
I like it. All right. So one of the questions that one of the responses that we got from our question was, what conversation should we have to honor Women's History Month? And one of our amazing guests on the show responded to us. She said, the plight and beauty of Black womanhood, which I thought was a great topic to go into. Also, I mean, let's not just stop there. We can continue, but I really like that way of opening the conversation. So the plight and beauty of Black womanhood.
I mean, it's a mouthful, you know, because I feel like they start out to be like two opposing themes, mm-hmm. but find some sort of like intersection in the middle. And I don't know, I'm definitely open to your opinion on the way that I'm perceiving it, right? Like I'm tempted to start out by talking about the beauty, because mm-hmm. you know, the beauty, or maybe talking about the plight first, I don't know, maybe like finishing it on a sweet note or a positive note. But I feel like talking about the plight and the beauty, one thing that even in this question that I kind of struggled with, mm-hmm. and this is my brain kind of going a little bit too deep, so I do apologize.
No, it's not like, too deep.
Even start at the top. Even put it to me, like the question is like plight and beauty of Black woman is like that there's this connection that mm-hmm. I sometimes don't want to be made that happens, right? Like for a lot, it's like, you know, like, you know how they talk a lot about like beauty is pain, right? No yeah. pain, no gain. Mm-hmm. Like as if like you have to go through the journey of misery and pain and challenges in order to achieve something great. Like the greater the pain, the greater the outcome. When I'm really trying to kind of like, separate from that,
right?
And so when we talk about the plight and beauty, to me it's like, you know, I understand conjunctions, don't get me wrong, and I understand that we can still have like two independent themes here,
of course.
I just feel like kind of putting them in such a close proximity to one another, it creates this, it perpetuates a little bit in my head, and I could be wrong again, it creates this, it perpetuates this notion that, you know, Black women go through as much pain as they are beautiful. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like Black women experience pain and joy almost to the same scale. And in a lot of ways, I feel like it's true, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when we talk about the different ways that racism holds Black women back from leadership positions, for example, or we talk about the different like myths surrounding like the like fertility, or even when we're talking about the different stereotypes, right? The strong Black woman, the angry Black woman narrative, the, you know, Black women in how they're portrayed in media, in television as like being sassy and always already like fight and thing, no, take their rings and take their earrings off and like, you know, go to battle. The hardness of Black women, like as if we don't experience physical pain and therefore emotional pain. I'm talking about heartbreak. I'm talking about rejection and things like that on the same scale as our counterparts. Like it hurts, but those things exist. So what are your thoughts on the question itself? And if you wanted to break it down similar to how I'm seeing it, do you want to start by going into the plight, or do you want to start with the beauty?
I mean, I feel like sometimes we have to start off with a little bit of toughness before we get into sweetness, right? Like a what's a sour candy? You start off both sour and inside is sweet. A Sour Patch
Yeah,
candy,
sour, sweet, gone.
Sweet, and then whatever. Anyway, so plight is by Google, right? The Google Oxford definition is a dangerous, difficult, or otherwise unfortunate situation. So just from the question itself, that someone would even put those two words together, plight and beauty, makes you feel like that's such an intense way to describe it, an unfortunate situation of Black women and an unfortunate feeling. It's just like, I feel like a lot of times being a Black person, like the pain is always parallel to our lives. Like we have to endure pain to be a true citizen, to fit the true stereotypes and things of that nature. And I feel like that's part of the reason why the soft life or the soft era really started, because people are really dissecting, like, why do I have to be labeled this angry person, whatever. The anger comes from, if you would remember from our very first episode, Black Rage from season one, we are entitled that rage because we weren't given anything. We had to build everything, and then we were told that what we did was not enough, even though what we did really catapulted the entire world. So why is it that we have to continue to struggle and continue to go through these motions of anger, these depictions of despair in order to be considered beautiful? Like, for example, I've been watching Love is Blind, the new season. I don't know if you've seen it.
Of course
you've seen it, of course, right? So there's this couple, AD and Clay, and I feel like
can we take a moment to kind of talk about AD and Clay, though?
No, or don't even tell me too much. I didn't watch the finale. Don't tell me too much.
Okay.
Don't tell me too much.
I mean, we can take it up to what happens.
Yeah,
you know, in the finale, it's just Are you talking about the one episode? Okay.
Yeah,
we can talk. I mean, there's so much to dissect even before going to the finale.
Plenty
of material.
Their relationship, I feel like, is such a depiction of what the expectation of what a Black woman should endure is. This man is coming up to this woman in his own will. No one forced him to do any of these things. And his expectation is for you to take on all of my grief, take on all of my issues, take on all of these things that I do not see as good pieces of myself. However, I'm going to intertwine them within our relationship. And because you're someone who's going to hold me down and have my back or whatever, because I expect this from a Black woman, that is how I then measure the caliber of your love. Like, I feel that was like the entire depiction of their relationship. Like,
and what about the response, right? And I feel like there's so much of that, again, that we've been indoctrinated into, right? When it's like, yeah, I'm going to hold you down.
You're going to be
so good. You know, we're going to be like, you're going to be so right. Like, I'm going to elevate because this is my job as a Black woman to take on this plight. to get you to the space that you need to be. Like, I'm a factory for your brokenness,
exactly.
And I'm going to repair all of your pieces. And there is so much so much submissiveness to that really just like irked me to such a degree. and that even includes like, you know, what you're going to do in order for me to like what you're going to accept from me. Right. So like, or what I'm going to kind of get you to listen to, i.e. I am talking about his cheating. Mm-hmm. And like, is it some sort of freaking genetic disorder? You know what I'm saying? Like,
my dad cheated on my mom.
Like, do you just accidentally falls into a vagina? Like, right. Are you kidding me?
Jay-Z used to cheat on Beyonce.
First of all, terrible freaking examples. Like, you know, you got me tight. I just...
The billionaire that cheated on the other billionaire. That is what you're comparing yourself to?
Like, you're comparing yourself to celebrity. Like, the self-importance to me was so grating.
The self-entitlement.
I could not swallow. Like, it was just very difficult.
You were not swallowed up by his...
I was not at all.
You were not swallowed.
I struggle. But, like, great point, though. Like, it's such a great depiction of that.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's do it. So you're cool. Like we need to start talking about the tough stuff. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the plight of Black women. Right. Like what is the thing that grinds your gears most? Or are there like some common misconceptions or stereotypes that you're just like, are you kidding me?
Are you dumb?
In the age of our Lord, and it's just ridiculous.
In the age of our Lord.
Yeah.
Play being like labeled as dangerous or difficult really like piques my like I guess my intrigue, because I feel like if our livelihood is being described as dangerous or difficult, is it something that we need to agree to? Like when people say I'm a strong Black woman, like I enjoy being a Black woman because I am labeled as a strong person. I mean, why do you have to be such great levels of strong in order to be so proud of yourself? I feel like there's certain things that we do not allow ourselves to experience. We do not allow ourselves to be softer. We don't allow ourselves to be heard and seen in a way that isn't necessarily poorly depicted. If that makes mm-hmm. sense. Like,
no, completely.
The reasoning of rage and strength comes from things we've endured. However, as times continue, we are allowed to be strong without having to go through the things that cause us despair. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Beauty does not have to come from the concrete. Like, beauty does not have to come from such
Can
toughness.
You put that in a t-shirt for me, please? Beauty does not have to come from concrete. Like, that is some... Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Word drops. Yeah. No, but it's something that I do believe, because, I mean, like, between just the medical things that we experience, like, people of color, Black women in particular, whenever they're enduring certain levels of pain, it's just, we're not heard, we're not listened to. There's many examples of that, and you know, we don't necessarily have to go into it. However, it's because so much of this medicine, all these books of medicine, all these studies were made on white people. And so when it comes, and then there's been labels of how the melanin is so dense, or Black people's skin is so dense, that if we cut through with a normal, you know, size knife or regular scalpel, whatever, they won't feel it. We need a bigger knife, we need a denser needle. In fact, that we experience same levels of pain. And when I say something hurts, it hurts. I'm not making it up. And mm-hmm. between being a Black person and then transitioning to being a Black woman experiencing any levels of pain, it's like we almost need somebody else in the room to double down to advocate for us. I'm mm-hmm. saying something hurts. And then now I need another person in the room to say, well, she said something hurts, instead of me just being in the room by myself to say, this hurts. You know
and
what I mean?
To just be believed and just taken at your word and taken care of from that space.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a very, very big one. I mean, there's like so many things, especially when we're talking about in the medical industry specifically, mm-hmm. where like a Black women disproportionately experience like Black women experience disproportionate amount of unfair treatment.
Right.
And if we're talking about in the fertility realm, though there is a myth about like Black women cannot be infertile, that is absolutely false. Black women are pregnant, they do experience the highest risk of death during child labor. Mm-hmm. And we have the highest rate of death during child labor, which absolutely makes like no sense. Mm-hmm. The level of like preeclampsia that goes symptoms that go completely unrecognized, unacknowledged, untreated, the epileptic seizures, preeclampsia, diabetes, like gestational diabetes mm-hmm. that occurs like during pregnancies that put us at a greater risk of lethality and morbidity that we just... I feel like now it's being talked about a little bit more, but even then I feel like it's being talked about in such a vacuum. Like, how do you like integrate that into like mainstream conversation right. where you're having conversation in general about this particular topic, you bring and elevate the disparity that exists in this right. particular realm. Like exactly. that's the part that really upsets me. Mm-hmm. And even though Black women as of like 2022, like 65% or more of Black women had a higher level of education, I'm talking about master's level mm-hmm. education or more, were the least population to get promoted into leadership roles. Right. So like, how are we acknowledging these things? Like, I feel like, and that's my problem. Like, we have this platform, right? And like, you and I are we're not afraid to delve deeper, not afraid to make mistakes in some of the things that we're sharing, not afraid to go into research and recant if we need to, right? Very careful about how we approach certain things. Right. I know that for a fact. But, and people listen and people have their opinion and it's wonderful. I still struggle with the fact that there's only a particular group of people maybe that like listens to these right. conversations, right? And you have the option to tune it out. You have the option to unsubscribe from certain hard topics, mm-hmm. from certain conversations about inequality and inequities. And if you're not navigating this realm, like if you don't work in a medical sector, how involved are you in the engagement about what's happening there, right? And, mm-hmm. and like not believing Black women's pain and not believing, you know, Black people's pain in general, or the issues like the medical comorbidities that exist in that realm. When you're talking about, if you're not in the foster care system, like how do you know about what's happening with like Black and brown children, right? Right? Like how do you have maybe surface knowledge of it, but you may not at all be exposed to it. And if you don't, you're not, then you live your life with these blinders on and you just continue about your day not knowing like so much that is going on because these conversations are happening in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And I struggle with that.
I feel like that's something that should be discussed, but is very common. Like we mentioned in the first episode, like the state of delusion continues. People feel mm-hmm. like because they're not directly affected, so they feel, even though they are, because they feel they're not directly affected to where they can't directly touch something. They can't directly change that order, that right, that law. They feel like they cannot be involved in the change that is necessary. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's a very common feeling. It's a very... I don't know how to explain it, but in a lot of things that we want to change, we'll go through those processes of, okay, I want to be involved, right? Even though I'm not directly touching it, I want to know what the next step is. And people get to like the first step and then it's a little bit difficult. So then they back out. Well, I did my part, but then they don't realize how much that does affect people. Like right mm-hmm. now, I'm really grateful. I encourage women to go after their higher education. We need more women in medicine. We need more women in different places so that people can advocate for us and understand. But we also need more Black people in these spaces because a lot of these studies weren't done on us to where we trust these processes. Because, I mean, studies, quote unquote, have been done, but to our devastation, to where our people are dying, to where we have sicknesses and illnesses for generations and no one can find out what exactly is it. But in fact, there was something that happened, you know, years ago that whatever study occurred, it wasn't shared or whatever it was. And they're continuously watching that person till their death or till their demise. And their family has no idea. There's certain things that I understand where the trust lacks, to where we're not willing to do certain studies. However, as we start to infiltrate like these different worlds that we were never allowed to be in before, I feel like mm-hmm. we can really make the difference and we can really like increase these studies, increase these changes. However, it takes more than one person. It takes it takes more than one person to escape this plight and enter the beauty portion of our livelihood. We have to enter the portion where it is beautiful for us and our mortality rates go down and certain things we experience are not as prevalent. Like, why are we going through so many things and we're so, I guess, we're further into the knowledge of medicine, we're further into knowledge of different things, but a lot of them don't directly relate to us.
I'm telling you. So I moved to DC during the winter time, right? Mm-hmm. And I specifically recall having a really hard time adjusting to the weather changes. I know, like, it's not a drastic, it's too much of a drastic difference. No, so, like, don't come for me. I do understand that. I come from tropical privilege, okay? Like, tropical. Haiti, warm always. And then from there, Florida, and then anywhere else I went to, like, for, like, say, military or for temporarily, like, the hardest piece for me, and I was young, too. You know, we have better lungs when we're young or whatever. And so when I did basic training in the heart of winter in negative 10, I was like, I can handle it.
What's,
you know,
the coldest,
and, like,
also, what's the coldest you've been in? What's the coldest?
Negative 12 or negative 15. Similar. And that was in Chicago. That was in Great Lakes, Illinois, baby. Oh my goodness. That
cold
was
as hell. Mine was negative 14. Once when I was in North California, and another time when I was in Afghanistan, it got to be like, California got to like negative 11, and then the winter time in the desert got to be negative 14. I said, oh no, baby.
Ooh. And you're in a desert? Listen, it's tough. Yeah. It is so tough. And so when DC compared to that, but I just want to kind of point that disclaimer out there that I'm also older.
It's been a little time since my last trip to a cold environment. You're
thinking, like, it's about looking cute and not about being warm. And so my asthma came out with a vengeance, right? And I was just like, oh, breathing is a how incredibly blessed you are when you're able to breathe unobstructed, and then all of a sudden you have to fight for your third breath. You know what I'm saying? I was fighting for my life on that catch. It was bad. Yeah. And I remember it got to a point where I didn't even want to go get checked out, but I finally did. And when I got there, first of all, the wait time was ridiculous, and I felt that I couldn't breathe. Mm-hmm. I had a very hard time doing it. Like, it was to the point where, like, I was, like, Googling my symptoms, which, you know, take with a grain of salt, honestly. You may not want to, like, you know, it's going to send you spiraling. But one of the things that I knew for a fact is, like, right, but then one of the things, you know, like, you went to school, you studied some anatomy, you know that whenever there's, like, a decreased oxygen levels, like, it makes you very tired. Mm-hmm. And, like, so, like, it makes you sleepy because, like, it's this part of, like, your body that's just slowly shutting down, to be honest with you. Yeah. And so you feel more fatigue. And I was sleeping in the waiting room pretty much the entire time. And then finally went to the back and I was teary-eyed, and, like, to the point I'm like, oh my God, is this all in my head? And I felt like I was being a nuisance. And I told one of the people who came into the room while I was waiting for the doctor, I was like, I'm having a really hard time. She handed me a pulse oximeter. An oximeter, like the one that measures your oxygen levels and your
when you breathe based into
on
that,
whatever. Mm-hmm. No, they put it on your finger.
Okay,
yes, okay. And then it kind of gauges, like, your oxygen levels, and then I think my oxygen level was like a 97 or 96 or something like that, and then looks at me and she's like, you're fine, you're getting enough oxygen, and then walked out. Right? Yes. And so that didn't help at all in that moment. Like, there was no calming, there was no reassurance, like, there was nothing. It was it's this reinforcement of, like, oh, this is in your head, or you're making a bigger deal out of this than it actually is, and that you're actually okay, but you're just wasting my time, kind of thing. And you couple that, you know, with a healthy dose of already having medical anxiety, and you're in for a trip, you know, and it was just about that. Like, it was about asthma. It was, I mean, I know, like, it can be life-threatening. It has been life-threatening. It is. And But it, like it, I also, you know, had my medication. Like I had albuterol. Like I had done everything. Mm-hmm. I had done like breathing treatments. I had taken my pump. I was doing my daily stuff. Like it was really I was struggling. Mm-hmm. And even before I made it to the medical place, I struggled with even going there because I'm like, they're probably not going to believe me anyway. And even thinking myself, like, maybe it's all in my head and I need to chill out about it. Mm-hmm. And how dangerous is that form of thinking, right?
That's how people die. That's how people die. Outside of being ignored, you get ignored so often that you get used to it, to where you talk yourself out of the way you're feeling.
And I was gaslighting myself.
Man. And the thing is, as you're getting older too, like there's a lot of things you just have to pay attention to. Like you have to acknowledge, okay, there's something different happening, and I've never experienced this before, or I've experienced something like this before, and this is not part of my normal feeling. And mm-hmm. I feel like acknowledging things as we get older is very, very important, because mm-hmm. like, okay, when we were younger, we might have been spring chickens or whatever, and we bounced back in the way that we thought we did, or we ignored it to a point where it no longer became something else in the front of our minds. However, mm-hmm. as we get older and we're seeing things develop and we have more of a grasp on what reality really looks like, mm-hmm. we have to pay attention to our bodies. We have to pay attention to the way that we're feeling. And then the way that I feel, there's two things. There's two ways I probably would have handled that, right?
Please tell me.
Girl, I would have walked the same way that nurse walked out that room. I would have walked out behind her and asked for a different nurse and asked to be seen again. And if I was denied whatever it was, I would have gone to a different doctor, but then they would have heard from me. They would have heard from me, because there's no reason why I'm going to, because I cannot breathe. Okay, I cannot inhale, exhale. Without me breathing, I will die. And you're telling me I'm fine. So if I was fine, I would never be here. Right? And nothing mm-hmm. in my chart says she pretends to not be able to breathe. There's nothing in my chart
that really I have nothing to do on a freaking evening. Right. And like, I want to waste 4 hours of my time just waiting to be seen for not being able. Like, I feel like there's like that next level of thinking that we don't always put into the forefront of our minds. Like, do you really think I have nothing better to do
right.
than sit up in your waiting room area when I could be doing literally anything else?
I'm trying to survive out here. Just don't you know I have to prove myself 2, 3, 4 times more than my peers, and you think I would choose to be in this waiting room looking at you?
Right. Yeah. It's wild.
That shit would piss me off.
Yeah, I'm telling you, like, so I almost walked. I mean, I was on the verge of walking out, and I attempted it the first time, and then finally the sudden nurse came and was like, no, wait, I'm going to try to do what I can. And then
a different nurse or the same nurse?
It was a different nurse. And then 35 minutes later, I'm like, you know what? I'm leaving. And then the nurse saw me. She's like, you know what? Hold up. Let me,
after 35
wait.
Minutes of you yeah, being another in that 35. Room?
Yeah, no, I was in the room for like an hour and 15, an hour and a half, in addition to the 2.5 hours that I was in the room.
So they just jump to action when they see you about to leave?
Yeah.
They're trying
isn't
to keep
that great?
Clock. They're trying to keep a clock on you. They're trying to see isn't how that, long isn't that patient fantastic? Is in there so they can charge you, or they can have the right to charge whatever amount that they're charging for their mm-hmm. services.
Yeah.
These people do not give a fuck.
So when we're talking about the plight, I feel like it's so much of it. Mm-hmm. And there are some that we elevated, like we talked about just now, right? And we talked about like women in leadership position. I remember like another like quick anecdote is like, I remember the first time I ever got my hair braided mm-hmm. and I went into like a workplace and the comment that I received and it was like, oh, this is what we do now type of thing. Caused me to not braid my hair for another 2 years until I was like, you know what? I'm going to show up how I'm going to show up, and accepting that and just like embracing that. But like when we talk about like the way that, you know, Black women are perceived in the workplace, the way that Black women are not believed in the medical space, the way that leadership positions are completely elude Black women when it comes to that. Also the stereotypes, right? They're either like very good caretakers and like cooks, or they're the sidekick to the main character in the movie, and they always have like sassy comments. And this is just like talking about the realm of Black women, but it intersects with all women right. in general when it comes right. to like, especially when we're talking about women in fat bodies, like women in, you know, who are not like traditionally beautiful, mm-hmm. right? When we're talking about like what a standardized like level of beauty actually right. is. Women who are quote unquote too intelligent. Like, I mean, it but really spans that. So much that. Of that. But I feel like I really, like, we know the plight, and I think our opinion is that we want to get to a place where we're able to kind of, like, disassociate the plight with the, like, from the beauty.
Right.
And so, speaking of that, I kind of want to, like, talk about the beauty now. Like, yeah. what's beautiful about, one, being a woman, but, like, particularly being a Black woman?
Yeah. I like the way you circled into that. I wanted to just quickly say, like, when it does come to the plight, one thing that I would like to see is for women to uplift women. One thing that I've experienced, I feel like, within my professional career, is some women get into places of power, and because they had to fight and scratch and climb and step over people to get to that place, they see a woman that's below them, and instead of putting out their hand and helping them get to that step, they make them go through the fight even harder. And that's one
because
thing.
I have to go through it.
Right.
You have to go
exactly.
through it.
Exactly. I had to go through it fighting a white man. But now that I'm in this white man's position and you want to be in my place and I know I have to be twice as good, now you have to be twice as good than me. Not realizing how much effort that person even took to even get to that point. Like, we get into places where we have fought tooth and nail for certain positions. And then one thing about me in particular, if I notice that I'm working for... I'm not even the main character. I am the supporting character of a person of color, a woman of color, like someone that is just not what the traditional, whoever's sitting in these big seats look like. It's just not another white man. I am so excited. I am excited. I am thrilled. Right. I am like, yes, girl, lead me. I will follow. Because I just feel like it's important for us to be seen in those positions of power, to be seen in those positions of making change and making difference and being able to be seen as someone that's intelligent enough to make certain decisions. I enjoy it. I am someone that, like, if I see that there's a person of color or a woman sitting in a seat of power and I'm applying for that job, there's a certain level of enthusiasm that comes over me. Like, yeah, girl, I want to. And it gets me excited for the interviews. And I don't talk to them because I feel like there's levels of comfort. I'm not going to talk to you like I know you, right?
Right.
I know you took a lot. Like, a lot of effort to get here. I'm going to speak to you the way that you should be spoken to because you deserve that respect, right? That's just one thing. I really despise when women just don't treat other women in a way that you walk through this door to hold the door open. Because I'm going to hold the door open because I know how much work it took for me to get here. Babe, I'm holding the door open. And the goal is since you're behind me, your goal is to surpass me. Your goal is to get to the next step. There's no way that I can do this on my own. That's my last thing.
There's no way. Oh my God, that was so good.
Ooh, that's my last
thing. I want to bottle up this conversation and just kind of like keep it in my, you know, like near me. And anytime I'm going through like a difficult time, just kind of like beep and then just listen to it and just feel that encouragement and empowerment feeling like all the way over. That was really beautifully said.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. I do feel that way, girl.
Dang, girl. You're so smart.
Thanks. You're also extremely intelligent. And I enjoy the work we do together. I do.
I do, too. Yeah. I do, too.
So part of the beauty is this. This is something that I find absolutely beautiful. Two people of color, two Black people, two Black quote-unquote women are speaking to each other in a way that isn't demeaning, that isn't like... in a way that makes the other person feel less than. Because you guys know how I feel about Tess. I'm like, Tess, what does this mean? Tess! My partner's like, you have to stop treating Tess like she's a dictionary.
No. It's good. But I'm happy to do it. I'm so happy to do it. And like, honestly, I feel like I can be quite literal, and I think I share that a lot. And you bring these nuances that I don't even sometimes consider. I'm like, okay, well, this is black and white, and this is the way that I'm seeing it. You're like, well, have you considered that you're only seeing like half of the picture? And I'm like, what are you talking about? You're like,
there's all of
this.
And then
you just, and then you like very calmly just flip photo over, and I'm like, oh, there's a whole world here.
There's a whole
and
other world.
That's what you do. Like you bring the gray, you bring the nuances, and you bring this perspective. Because like even as we first started talking about this, and now we're talking about the plight, there was so much of my focus that was placed on like the exterior world and how it's viewed, like how they view Black women. And then you were like, nah, how do we view ourselves in these spaces? And how, like, we already know they exist, but like, how do we then navigate them? And here's what I would do. And I think there's so much strength and power in that. So thank you for breathing life into me and into these conversations. Into the world. What other I like we have these moments where we're just like, oh, let's just bask in it for a second. Like this is good.
We have to. It's important. I feel like there's beauty in a lot of things that we do. There's beauty in community. I feel like within the last 2 years, I've really been able to find more of a community. I am someone who's very much introverted. Like I have extroverted tendencies, I guess. But I have my moments. I am myself around you because you're my main one. You've known me for a very long time. You're my main one. I feel like I can be very much myself with you. And I feel like as I get to know more people, I do become more of myself. However, I am an introverted person. I will stay in my room all day and be just fine. However, there's beauty in community. There's beauty in understanding what other people are experiencing. There's beauty in knowledge. There's beauty in all these different things. And I feel like within our community specifically, there's beauty in us. Like, we hold things that no other people have. Like, we have the Eve gene, which I've mentioned before, how as a Black woman, we can create any colored person, even if the other person that we're mating with does not look like that.
Right?
It's beautiful. Like, if there's someone in our lineage that looks a certain way, 100, 200 years later, we can have someone look just like them and be of a whole different color and a whole other, like, I guess, schematic, I guess, a body type. Mm-hmm. And we are the only type of person that could do that. And I feel like that's absolutely beautiful. So there's beauty in things that people cannot capture. There's beauty in things that cannot be bottled. There's beauty in experience. There's beauty in knowledge. There's beauty in community. And like being a Black person, being someone that is able to celebrate being a Black person in this time is very, very incredible. To like just to think about what life might have been if we weren't like this, if we weren't able to just celebrate ourselves, celebrate our journey, mm-hmm. celebrate our love, what it would look like. There's such beauty in our lives, not necessarily beauty in the struggle, because we ain't gotta talk about the plight all the time, even though there is beauty in growth. There's beauty in growth for sure. Mm-hmm. The struggle portion, we can miss that.
We can miss that.
We can miss it. Yeah. Because we have to grow regardless. So mm-hmm. it's like the way that I see it is our beauty is intertwined in all the things that we do. We have such beauty that we can express to others, but we have such beauty that just sits within us. That's what I feel like our beauty is. I feel like it's phenomenal.
Look at your face. I can't stop smizing. It's crazy. Oh my God. No, that was gorgeously said. I think about when you mentioned like being like having the Eve gene, I also was thinking about something as simple or complicated, depending on where you stand, as our hair, for example. Like there's so much versatility in the way we do our hair. And the way we style it and what we do with it. And I feel like it is such, like it's intangible for so many other groups, for so many other, like, collects. Like, I just feel like the way that we just carry our hair and like the story that, the stories that our hair tells. And I will even go as far as saying like the feeling of having your hair braided by another Black woman. is divine. I don't know how to explain it. It's just like the first time I experienced it, it felt, and I was like, wait, no, maybe I'm just tripping. Maybe it's just like something,
you ain't tripping,
you know, because I didn't get my hair braided for like until I was a full-on adult, right? And so the first time it happened, I was like, yeah, really? Didn't have my hair, like, I'm talking about, like, having, like, hair extension, like, plaits in my hair type thing. Did not happen until I was a full-on adult. It didn't happen until a few years ago. And really? The first time,
why is that
yes.
So, I can't imagine.
That feeling, right? It's weird. But, like, that's what it is. And then I remember the first time it happened, again, I felt like a shame for wearing it because it's not quote unquote professional. I have since evolved. Yes, you know. we're in a much better place now. But then when I went back and I was like, I just need the confirmation that I wasn't like I wasn't tripping, like the way that I felt having my hair braided and by like and it was just like there and there's no to me, it's like there's something that maybe it's the metaphor of like getting your roots tied into the larger strings and strands of life that really hits me, but there's like this disconnection that reignites for me to my roots, and I feel like it reminds me of where we are and where we come from and where I've come from, and it's just beautiful. So that's it. Like there's beauty in this very like very succinct way, yeah. You know, and it's just absolutely amazing to me.
I like that. I
wanted to kind of bring that.
Do you research the person who does your hair? Like, I know, like,
extensively.
Like, do you go into like, when I say research, like, for example, if I'm getting someone new to do my hair, either like I'll text them and then I gauge, I guess, the tone of the text, or I'll talk to them on the phone and based on their vibe, outside of the things we've already like established, the hair, whatever, if the vibe is rocking, they can do my hair. If the vibe seems off, they can't touch my head.
Oh, no, same. Like, I research it extensively. I will say, like, I have some quirks. I'm aware of it. some of those quirks revolve around, like, who touches certain part of like when I'm of like you, for beauty purposes, so to touches like certain parts of me. And so I remember you actually introduced me to my like to my current hair braider. And one of my plights here in living in another area is that she's not as accessible to me anymore. And when I tell you that I am like getting close to take a flight take just a flight so I can go get my hair done instead of finding somebody here, because it's a very tough thing for me. Like there's a level of trust that I feel like needs to kind of happen. Not everybody feels that way. I think maybe it's just a us thing, maybe it's a neurodivergent thing. I don't know. It's fine. But I do extensively research. I mean, that's what I do with a lot of things, but I feel the same way. Like if I don't vibe with you, like, and I don't like to talk on the phone, so usually it's via text message when I'm trying to, like, do that. And then if your response, like, is not, like, you know, it's not warm, or if I feel like you're just doing this just, like, and you don't give a crap, or you trying to treat me like crap already, you don't even know me, I have a problem with that. Yeah, and I will not hesitate. Yeah, and I will not hesitate to say, like, no, I'm all good. Right, I'm all set.
Mm-hmm. If something is off, I will not go back. And the thing is, too, I'm very loyal to my hair people. So, like, I have someone who does, like, my hair, like, all the time. Like, traditionally, I have someone who does my hair specifically when I'm going to go out, because they're, like, really good with, like, styling and this or whatever. And she's also expensive, girl. And then, but I only have those two people. And then, like, and I'll keep that person for an extended time. Like, there was one person who did my hair and my hair wasn't locked. And I had her throughout my time in the military because she kept my hair in regulation. But also, she had, like, growing hands. Like, she spoke to me when she did my hair. Like, she massaged my head and she spoke into me. She was kind. Let me shout her out. Her name is Get Glammed Up on Instagram. Glenice. Ooh. She's amazing. She did my natural hair, just wigs, locks, everything. And then the person I go to for big styles, her name is Bebe. She is Deep Roots Goddess on Instagram. And then the person who does, like, my hair, like, tends to my hair all the time, like, for, like, styles and things, because I'm trying to grow out my hair. And I can call her to be like, girl, I'm going to need a touch up on the front and the back. Like, she's just, she's amazing. And she prays over me, which I love. And her name is Dada. She's Izzy Hairstyles on Instagram. Those are my three people.
Yeah,
and
our whole family subscribes to Dada's, by the way.
Yeah, like, the whole team.
I was trying to get my hair done very quickly. And my braider, and I'll shout her out too. QOK Braids, yes, on Instagram. Q-O-K Q, braids. Like the letter Q, OK Braids. And I don't think it was like such a short notice. So for a while I was like, oh my God, I don't think it's going to happen. And so I was like, I asked you, and you were like, oh, Dada, but she was actually like on a personal thing, yeah, and was not available. And I was like, darn it. But things happen for a reason. And then I met, you know, my hair braider, and I just texted her randomly the other day. I'm like, girl, these locks are still holding strong and pretty, and I'm almost at month three. So thank you. I just thanked her. No, I'm not ready. I'm not ready to let go. I will. It's gonna happen soon.
Black hair is a science.
Watch my hair get locked.
That's how some people start locking their hair, though. They'll do the full locks and they'll let it grow out, and once it gets a certain length, they cut off the full locks and do it. There's definitely a science to black hair, and us mentioning this is like, we know how energy transfers, and good energy matters. So like the conversations that we have with each other, and like us mentioning about pouring into each other, holding the door open for each other, and acknowledging each other's success, acknowledging each other's beauty, acknowledging each other's struggle to get to the beauty, or acknowledging the beauty through the struggle is really important. Acknowledging people's right for their emotions to include the rage, because the rage doesn't just happen to be rage. You know what I mean? There's so many things that comes with it. We are continuously fighting for equal rights when it comes to women and men and the comparison and the wage gap and everything. We're fighting for equal rights not only in the workplace, but within our uteruses. Like, there's no reason why there's discussion as to abortion, not abortion, and rights to care. But no one is talking about penises. Like, there's a lack in that too. There's no proper science and things. There's so many things that we lack, and we're so far down the line of what science and medicine looks like. And ultimately, like we've said, for a lot of things, it probably needs to be completely recreated so that there's some form of intersectionality in it to where it makes sense. And then also believe us. Believe me. I feel like that's something that definitely has beauty. If you believe the person that's telling you what's going on, you are allowing them to really bask in their beauty. Like, I am this person. I am standing on these 2 feet. I can stand tall. I am beautiful. Me speaking to you and you hearing me is a form of beauty. So let's hear each other.
Absolutely. Ooh, thank you. I wanted to, power to the women. Period. I wanted to just a quick history thing and some cool things that a cool thing that I learned. I didn't know. And some people know and some people don't. So 1920 actually when we talk about the landmark for women, and especially really to the right to vote and things like that, there are two specific ones. The one that I officially recognize is the one in 1963, because there was one in 1920 where we talk about the women experiencing more liberties, mm-hmm. and things like that. It was very very segregated. It was very specific to a class of people. It was very specific to the right to vote for white women. And that change in 1963, where there was, you know, with the civil rights and everything and the women's suffrage movement, where women of color actually were able to be part of the democracy of the United States. And so wanted to say, you know, shout out to that, because that's how, you know, women are able to vote now. The second thing that I learned, it was about Harriet Tubman, mm-hmm. actually. And
ooh, Harriet.
I don't
Harriet
know how many that girl. People... Yeah, she was that
she was
girl.
Really tough.
There's actually a book, I think it's called She Did, like, She Came to Slay. I recommend it. It's called She Came to Slay. It's done by this... a black historian who wrote the book. Add it to your list, read it, it's phenomenal. Anyway, so it actually talks about the story of Harriet Tubman. And one of the things that I learned, which is like so cool, and I don't know if a lot of people know, but like her name is actually Araminta Ross. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, right? Exactly. She was born Araminta Ross in 1822, and her nickname was Minty.
Huh.
So... she, you know, I feel like sometimes when we talk about like prominent figures in history, right, mm-hmm. we think about them in these like very grandiose ways, like what they're like based on their accomplishments. Like, it's almost feel like I can't touch you because you're like this like unattainable thing, mm-hmm. and you're more of like a movement that is like, you're more of a vision, a movement, something, an aspiration, almost like these people are like ethereal, like, and they were not really here.
Right.
But there's something about knowing her name, Araminta Ross, also known as Mentee, that really kind of humanizes her. And in the way that you're like, oh, like, this was a person mm-hmm. who went through some hard stuff and like lost her sisters and family members, like, you know, through like to slavery, and did that, but it also she loved mm-hmm. and she cared, and she, like, her second marriage was actually to a younger man, you know, because she was doing the thing, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, all right, Mentee, you go, girl. Like, I feel like there's just so much about it that just kind of humanizes her. Wanted to elevate her, you know, when talking about women's history.
Yeah.
Malala is another one. Like, there's like a really prominent, you know, person. But also in that moment, I think we forget that she was a teenager and
yeah.
who just also wanted to be a teenager,
right,
you know, and so anyway, you know,
I appreciate that. I love the little knowledge, little things that you share with me. That's why I'm always,
you know, I like to sprinkle.
That's why I call you. I'm like, girl, I am that person. Yes. So I'm glad you mentioned that. So today being International Women's Day, I wanted to just highlight why it was created, who created it, aka from Google. It says it was
Thanks,
a German. So Clara Zetsky, who was a German socialist, first proposed an International Women's Day in 1911 because she wanted to improve women's rights as workers. She believed that mm-hmm. if women were synchronized globally in pressing for their demands, then their collective voice would be too hard to ignore. And I wanted to highlight that because, like we mentioned before, it is really important for us to hold the door open for each other. It's really mm-hmm. open for us to go through what we need to go through, of course, but not making it any harder for the person behind us, and really just closing that pay gap, making our voices heard, making certain rights heard, and us going after them. I feel like if we go through things together, if we attack things that are just not okay together, we could really, really take those things out. Imagine this was created in 1911 and now we're in 2024 where it is being highlighted, and we mm-hmm. need to have take advantage, I guess, of this month specifically to really highlight the rights that we need, to really highlight the gap in wages, to really highlight the reproductive yeah. rights that we do not have.
Especially, right, I was just about to say, especially as we undid like 50 years of progress and advancement. So, yeah, no, absolutely agreed.
And there's a huge fight right now against trans rights as well, especially in Florida. There's 3 bills that were just that were passed in local government that's being moved up to the Senate that is really taking the rights away from trans people and not recognizing them as people. And that definitely is within our rights as well to protect others. Mm-hmm. So please mm-hmm. do some research into what things are changing in your local area, but also find out what's happening within our country, because a lot of these things that may be happening in one state trickles and ends up happening in other states. Florida is just really loud. A lot of things that happen yeah. in Florida, we're just, the state itself is just really loud. So a lot of people know what's going on in Florida, and Florida is being used as an example. It's also being used as a scapegoat. So all these things are happening in your face in one state. If you're like, oh no, I can't believe this would happen. Mm-hmm. But then yep. are you paying attention to what's happening and what's changing in your own area, in your own states, and in within your own country? Making sure that
gotta
we continue to
stand.
Got to
keep that hand on the pulse, mm-hmm. and I got to keep that foot on the neck.
Foot on the neck is right. Speaking of foot on the neck, I hope you guys are following us on all of our social platforms. We have officially launched a YouTube channel. Make sure you go to Melanated Movement on YouTube, follow us, aka subscribe, hit the bell so you know when we have uploaded things, so you can get the visual along with the audio. So the audio for yeah. for our podcast, they launch Thursday evenings, and then typically our YouTube would launch that following weekend. So make sure you follow us on those things. Follow us on everything. So we're on
please do.
We're on Instagram, we're on Threads, aka Melanated Movement on there. If you want a link to everything all in one, you can go to to our linktree.com/melanated movement. It has everything on there, our YouTube channel, our Instagram, our Threads, X, I would say Twitter, but X is Twitter, and TikTok. Follow us and let us know not only what you think, but share with your friends. The best way for us to grow our platform is through word of mouth. So please use your mouth to share that word.
Use your mouth.
Not using, girl, listen. Anyway, so
use all that is available to you.
Exactly. Tweet it, put it on your story, tag us, because we'll definitely repost it and we'll tell you thank you, because we do appreciate it. And for everyone that's been supporting us most recently, thank you.
Yay, what she said. Thank you.
That's right. What I said.
I know we're hitting it very close to time and we gotta go. I wanted to say again, like, I'm just, like, so appreciative of you. We definitely focused on, you know, the plight and beauty of Black women. We talked about so much of the history there, too. It is a month for women, mm-hmm. and trans women are women. And all women. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. Like, I feel like my brain just, like, glitched. But all women, I want to talk about, like, how do you celebrate Women's Month, like Women's History Month? Like, how do you take part in it? What does that usually look like for you? I also kind of wanted to talk about, like, soft life before we left, like, kind of like a positive note. Yeah. Like, what does the soft life mean to you? And how do you, or do you not, maybe engage in living a softer life?
Soft life to me means I don't have to cook every night. I'm not gonna lie. Soft life is not being labeled as a domesticated or domestic partner. I hate that. Like, the conversation of who's gonna cook and who's gonna clean always gets under my skin. We both are gonna cook and we both are gonna clean. Because even if I was in a heteronormative, like, relationship, I think it's really important for both members, or all members, all parties of the relationship, really take part in maintaining and uplifting the relationship. So part of my soft life is breaking that expectation. Because, I mean, we grew up Haitian. I woke up at 6 a.m., girl. And I just woke up, I cleaned the house, I made breakfast, I made sure my brothers were okay, I took care of my family, and then my brothers were sleeping. And we're not doing that. I refuse to raise a son who is unable to equally put his part into maintaining not only a household, but a relationship and children, and not putting the entire emotional burden on his partner. So soft life to me is understanding the difference of being, I guess, uneven in relationships and really stepping up my voice, putting some bass in it. Yeah, and telling you I ain't washing these motherfucking dishes. Got washed them yesterday. That's what soft life means to me.
Soft life. I feel like it should be like a theme song afterwards. Like, you know, you should have different skits. Like, I am not washing the dishes today. It's like, it's okay, baby. I got it. And then it's like, so. And then you're like, and that's how you do soft life.
Right.
Wink. Equality. And it's like, soft life, you know.
Song.
You know I'm gonna throw a wrench in there.
I
right?
love it. Throw a wrench.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw that wrench. Okay. So and I agree with you. Like, I feel like especially growing up traditionally Haitian, there are just certain expectations that are placed upon you know, like women and young girls at a very tender age, where it's like you're supposed to cater to these men and you're supposed to do all of that stuff, right? And then you can do one or two things. Like, you grow up either like adhering to that principle and you're like, gonna go with it all the way. This is what I was taught and this is what I believe in and it works for me. Or you go the opposite way. Like, I am not washing these dishes today. Like, I did them yesterday. And also, there's leftovers. I'm not going to cook fresh food every day, right? Like, it's one of those two things, right? And it's one of those two directions. I wanted to kind of talk about when we're talking about equality in relationships, right? And we're talking about being on even planes, what do you make of people who embrace the traditional roles in a relationship, provided, here's my thing, that in other ways, monetary security or otherwise, they feel like their needs are being met. Because I think that that's a little bit of the challenge sometimes. It's like where we, and I was, you know, thinking the same way too before, where it's like, well, equality to me means like we're both going to cook, we're both going to do the dishes, and we're both going to iron, do laundry, whatever. And then I think like as like slowly, and I've had conversation, like remember I was having conversation with my friend, one of my best friends one time, and she was like, I love doing this stuff. I don't want my man in the kitchen when I'm cooking. I don't want him to be around. Like, I want to make the food. I want to serve the plate. And I want to look like do the dishes afterwards. The kitchen is my domain. And she was like, same thing when it comes to the cleaning. I don't want your botch cleaning job. Like, I know how I do it. I have my principle. Like, I have my approach. Like, I'm gonna go and clean how I want to clean, you know. And in turn, the way that I feel like I'm not the only one pulling my, you know, the domestic role or whatever the case is you're gonna help with the laundry, but also, first and foremost, you're going to provide. I'm cooking and I'm doing the dishes, but you're paying for the mortgage or you're paying for the rent or like you're providing something that it may not be in the same form of support, but that feels like I am safe, I am provided for, I am cared for, my needs are met. And honey, I'll be doing the dishes all day and I'll be cooking every day if that's what you want to do. But don't let me have to worry about how we're going to pay these bills next month. Like, that's your domain. Right. And so how do you feel about people like who adhere to the traditional roles of domestic life or partnerships? How do you feel about that?
I think it's the relationship. Like, it's the choice of the individual person and their partner. Everything is a conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a conversationalist. Have a conversation.
Yeah, that's true. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. So I feel like if there are certain expectations that someone has to be in a relationship to be happy and healthy, they're having that conversation with their partner. So if I'm someone who feels like by me doing my part in the home where I'm cooking, I'm cleaning, I'm maintaining, I mean, that's me pouring into you, because if I didn't do this, neither of us would have it, right? So if I didn't do it, then you, like, no one's going to have it. And then your way of pouring into me and pouring into this relationship is doing your portion. And if that portion is working and providing for this relationship in a monetary way, that's causing me to feel safe. And by me doing my part, that causes you to be safe. Then I think it's fine. I feel like... Oof. Every relationship is based on the person, because there's someone out there that's looking for a traditional quote unquote person that wants to do those things. And there's other people that are looking for non-traditional things. There's some people that are looking for compromise where, okay, in the inflation world that we live in, it's kind of tough to only have a household with one person that's bringing an income. So ultimately you both are going to have to work. You both are going to have to cook. You both are going to have to clean. You both are going to have to take care of the children, whatever. However, that can be dissected. If your partner doesn't know how to cook, babe, then you the person cooking. I hope they got a good Uber Eats account, or they're willing to drive to get the food, or they're willing to contribute in a way that the weight doesn't necessarily always fall on you. Because even if you're the person that can cook, you don't want to cook every day. And then it's understandable for some people, like, no, the kitchen is mine. It's understandable for someone, like, nah, babe, you're not going to clean, because the way you mopped the floor last time, you left streaks. I don't like that. They could just be some levels of ADHD involved. Okay. It could be you could just be a Virgo. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, we'll talk about it.
There's certain things about certain people that just make sense. If I'm someone that I prefer to clean because I like the way I clean certain things, then that just in that relationship works in that dynamic, even though I'm working, even though I'm bringing in the bread. I mean, whatever you are doing, that person has to be satisfied. That person has to feel poured into. And if ever it feels like it's uneven, then a conversation needs to be had to say, hey, I feel like I'm doing a lot on this side. I don't feel like you're contributing. How can we change this dynamic? And then also take time to just not do that. you should be going on dates every so often. You should be taking time to understand how the other person is feeling. You should be understanding of what the person is comfortable, uncomfortable with either doing or no longer doing or stopping or changing. A relationship is something that is continuously changing and evolving to match the persons that are in it. So I don't feel no type of way about people feeling any type of way about their relationships. If you want a traditional relationship, then that's you, babes. That's what makes you happy. If you want non-traditional, great. Me, myself, and I feel like it's something that I can change and I can work on because I am working and I know how to cook, girl, because the Haitian mom, my mama didn't.
You throw it down, man. Girl, oh my God, your soup is
the Dewey Kole I made the other day, the Dewey and Jojo I made the other day, babes.
Oh, my God. Can you, like, mail me something?
I'll make you some food when you come. I got you. Thanks. You know it's good when I tell my mom about it, because I'm not going to send her no pictures of it if it's crap. I told her about it, and then I brought her some, and she's like, wow. And, you know, Haitian moms, they're the worst.
They don't be doing compliments like that. No. Oh, I was talking to my mom, and then she was talking about, like, you know, putting, like, some recipes together and stuff like that.
I was telling her
Yeah, we're doing a recipe book, like the different things that we're trying to keep, like, trying to pass on some of those things that are being lost and trying to preserve them as much as possible. And she was talking about people who make good macaroni. She was like, you know, I'm good in some things. I think you got your mom's like cooking abilities and I got my mom's cooking abilities and that there are very niche specific things I'm good at. And then the rest is like, no.
Your mom's Mayim Moulin?
Oh, that's what she was talking about.
She made Mayim Moulin yesterday.
My corn, like my Mayim be hitting. And she's like, and I know that. And then she was talking about mac and cheese. Mm-hmm. And then she was like, you know, but mac and cheese, you know, I know, your Tati, so your mom, Ann's mom, and you got that. And I was like, wait, run this back?
Yeah, your mic is good.
Me?
Yeah.
You know how good it felt to be part of the recognized group of mac and cheese, the Haitian.
But you know who taught us how to make mac, though? My grandmother taught us to make mac.
Grandmother did.
So your mac better be good, or she gonna be coming for you to fix it. No, your mac is good.
No, I'm telling you, like I can feel her on my shoulder. Being like,
when they said let your ancestors guide you, Granny is guiding you, babe. She will not let that mac go to waste.
You can't go wrong with mac and cheese, man.
You better not fuck it up either. But really quick.
Yeah. No, I wanted to like speak on what you were saying.
Yes, please.
One of the key themes that you were saying, like that I really appreciated was the word safe. And I don't think like people value the word safety or the term safety or the feeling of safety in a relationship as much as we should. And really truly defining what safe means to you. Is your inner child able to come out and play? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like, you know, you have the highest form of friendship with the person you're doing partnership with? And also when you're looking for traditional person, are you bringing the equivalent to the table?
Exactly.
Because like, how are you trying to, you know, get your kid and eat it too at the same time? Like, how are you trying to split everything 50-50 but still expect for meals to be done, to still expect for laundry to be done, like the house to be clean and everything? There is an inequality there, babes. Mm-hmm. Maybe reevaluate that when we're talking about traditional roles. And yeah, you're awesome. Okay, that's it. I'm good.
I agree with you. I feel like when it comes to what people are expecting, they always project what the other person should do for them, but they don't highlight the things that they can do for that person. Like, exactly. Like, if you're like, I want to lead someone, and you meet someone that wants to be led, that wants to be submissive to you, you have to actually lead them. Like, you can't just say, I want to lead and then not lead. Like,
and then just sit back.
Right. Especially, like, and knowledge is power. You leading that person, you have to understand what your role is. And leading includes monetary leading. Monetary leadership is involved in leading because you are now leading certain decisions of that household. You are leading certain things. And being a leader involves a certain level of, like, you got to step it up. You can't come in the same threshold with the other person expecting them to follow you when you can't provide them anything that they can't already provide for themselves. Something to think about.
Food for thought. Speak on it. I love that. I didn't get a chance to talk about like the soft life for me, but it's pretty much like an amalgamation of all you just said. Like it's a combination. Like it's a whole like put in the pot type of thing, right? Where I feel like, and and maybe some of us are doing the work where just like we're stepping into our divine feminine a little bit more. Like, and then what I mean by that, we're talking about like the natural instinct to nurture and foster and flourish and care for, but not in this way of like, this is my responsibility to do. And in order for me to do that, I have to be tough in the world and I have to show up and be strong and all of that stuff, like all the time, but really just like allowing, because we have to step into the world, like we face these things as like women face inequality, period. When constantly. You add all of these intersection of race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender identity, like all of those different intersections, and you create even more layers of oppression and marginalization, right? And so I feel like the safest place for you to step and be fully who you are, whether that is like full womanhood, what is like a full personhood, whatever that looks like, full manhood in general, should be your home. Your home should be your safe haven. It should be, and your partner should be an equal contributor to that safety and that peace. And so what does that look like for you? And for me, I think like soft life means not having to keep my defenses up and not having to show up in my relationship, partnership, marriage, household in the same way that I do with the world. Like, right. I'm not trying to fight you. I'm trying to build with you.
Exactly. I should be able to take off my armor at the door. There's enough, like, there's enough on the outside world that keeps me from doing whatever it is. But when I'm home, I need to feel safe and I need to make the other person feel safe to where we are both in a place where we're comfortable. I agree with
that's
you.
Right. That's right.
I hope everybody appreciated the conversation that we had today. Definitely join the conversation online on any of our social media platforms or on social media platforms or on YouTube. Let us know what you think. Again, make sure you follow, subscribe, share. And again, this has been
the Melanated Movement Podcast with
Tess and Ann.
Until next time.